Welcome to the Intuitive Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Riddick. I'm an author, teacher, and eternal seeker of truth. I am on a mission to spread metaphysical knowledge to help you awaken your spirit. If you want to learn how to open the door to your divine self, you are in the right place. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Intuitive Awakening. My name is Dina. Thank you for joining me for this week's episode. Our guest today is somebody you're probably familiar with if you've listened to our previous episode on astrology. Alice Enoway is joining us again to talk about feng shui. She is an astrologer, as you are fully aware. She is a feng shui expert, an award-winning author, and life coach from Hawaii. And through her work, she's really transformed countless lives through her unwavering dedication to personal growth and happiness. Alice has written 9 books on self-growth and happiness, and her insights have really become a staple for those who are seeking guidance in navigating life's challenges. Hi, Alice. Thank you for returning to the show.
Dina, it's so good to be back. I love that your show is listened to by so many people. I'm just happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I know during our last episode, we definitely spoke about astrology, which was incredibly insightful, even just for myself, so much so that of course, I had to figure out what time I was born. I had to actually do that. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to forget this moving forward. But I also know that you're a feng shui expert. So I was hoping that we could get into this topic today, because again, this is new territory for me, so I don't know a lot. And I was hoping you could kind of walk us through feng shui and the principles behind it.
Yes, I would love to. So when I got to share astrology with you and your listeners in that sort of basic way, I like to say that I'm somewhat of a translator. So I like to translate what's going on in the sky with who you are, what's going on in your life. And feng shui is just brings us a little closer. And feng shui is really about what's going on in your environment and how that translates into how you're feeling and how you're flowing through life. So yes, any questions you have, I love breaking it down to its most simple form.
Okay, so can you just, you know, define exactly feng shui? Because my understanding is that it creates, I don't know, harmony between people and their environment.
Yeah. So let's do it this way. Like, what I do know is that there's a lot of superstition and myths around it that sort of, we kind of end up mixing feng shui with Zen and peace and all that. So if I was going to break it down to its simple, it's simply a philosophy that brings the principles of nature into our home. So I want you to think about when nature is at its best, the sun is shining, there's a light breeze, the water is flowing, nothing is stagnant, the trees are growing, the ocean, like, it's just, if you think about your perfect nature scene and you put yourself in nature, there should be a feeling of harmony. You feel good. So what we do in feng shui is we want that that natural environment to be brought into a home, because if you think about it, homes are man-constructed. There are straight lines. Like, think about your walls. They are straight. There are corners. There's no straight lines and corners in nature. Everything is flowing. Everything is smooth. So what you want to do is bring a balance into the environment, and we do it through furniture placement, colors, elements, and it is absolutely simple. I think that it's been made to be very complex over the years, because back in the day, you know, it's a secret, so you have to pay me to get the secrets of life, but it's really simple. So that's what I'd love to do, is just break it down to some simple principles for you.
Okay, great. So are there, well, what are some of these?
Okay.
Principles? Let's start there. What are some of these principles?
Okay, so let me start. I'll start out with a broad picture, because some people, I think by now, everyone has heard the word feng shui. It's a very, even though it's an Asian word, and just to define it further, I speak Chinese. So feng shui is how you say it. And feng, which is what you call F-E-N-G, feng, is the wind. And shui means water. So it really, literally translated, is wind and water, which simply means the invisible, which is wind, and the visible, which is water, all kind of together create harmony. So So what really confuses people is there's multiple schools. There's actually hundreds of schools of feng shui, different ways to do it. And the biggest thing is there's the compass school, and then there's another, it's like the black sex school. So all it simply means is that back in the day, there's a traditional school of feng shui that uses the compass. And so you might have heard face north, face west. We need to put this in the northeast direction. So that's compass school. I learned the other one, which is an evolution of compass, which simply means everyone is impacted by the environment. So when you walk through the door, the environment impacts you. So that's sort of just to, if someone says, well, what school of feng shui are you doing? It's called the black sex school. And it has nothing to do with like witches or black hat. It's just sort of like, there's all these different sects like of feng shui, and the black just happens to be sort of the invisible one. So if you're asking, so what are three principles? Let's just start with this. I think what I ended up doing, I started with astrology, and my other half says, well, if the stars and the planets impact you, what about your environment? So then when I learned about the environment, I started to understand that it's not as complex as it's made out to be. So the first, I distilled it down to three principles by the time I was sort of done doing all these consultations. The first thing is really that we always start with clutter and minimizing that. What is your understanding of clutter, or how do you feel personally about clutter?
It feels exhausting. I don't know how else to describe like clutter. Too many items. It's in almost like claustrophobic in a way.
Perfect. Okay. So that's all it is. We start with this. You imagine that you are attached to your environment with these invisible strands of invisible threads. Just imagine that. And the things that feed you energy, things that you love, actually fuel your energy. The things that you don't love, that are not supportive to you, actually drain your energy. So we're trying to create more gain than drain, basically. So clutter is considered dead energy. So think about you as a human being. We all are live energy. We need energy to get up and go through our day and to manifest and all of these things. Well, because as we love nature, we love a balance. So think about if you drew a vertical line down your body, you would have left and right. Like, we're very balanced. Our bodies are balanced. You have half a nose on each side, one arm on each side. So because we intrinsically need balance, clutter is considered dead energy because it's been there. It doesn't have any life force. It's unused, unloved. And so we are tied to everything in our environment. So clutter is one of the first things that we always say is like, you want to minimize it because it literally drains your energy. So if you've ever just cleared out your closet, donated stuff, gotten it a bit organized, for whatever reason, whether you're looking at your closet or not, you feel good. That is a return of energy to you. So the first principle is minimize clutter.
Okay. That is super helpful, especially with, draining energy or dead energy.
Yeah. And I think people used to have me come to their home and be like, where should I put the fountain? Where do I hang the wind chime? But if you don't take care of the basic foundational thing, no matter how many fountains we put in your house, and we can talk about that, what that means, it's like you're still living in an environment that has old dead energy. So that's one of the things. And it's not like you have to have a pristine home and get rid of everything. It's just anything that's unused, unloved, like we all have bits and pieces of it laying around, some of us more than others. And just letting go of that reduces the energy drain and results in an energy gain, because feng shui really is living in an environment that is harmonious, balanced, that feeds you energy versus drains you. So that's the first one. And I'm going to do, I'm going to share like the three basic principles, because anyone can do them at any time and have better feng shui in their house. There are higher level principles, like we can talk about like elements and bed position. I'll talk about all that. But the three basics is, number one, minimize clutter. Number two, surround yourself with things that you love. So think about it. If you see something in your environment that you have a good memory of, a good emotional attachment to, maybe someone gave it to you that you really like it, when you see that, that feeds you energy. But let's say you have something in your environment that you are not fond of. You're neutral. It's just there because it's there. That doesn't support you. So we're looking to create an environment that's supportive, because after the whole day is done, you go out and give out all your energy. When you come home, you want to be in your home and be nourished and supported. So surround yourself with things you love. So what this means is all you have to do really is take your box, walk around your room, and just look at all the things in your room. Some things might be old. Some things don't represent who you are today. Some things you love because they provide a great memory for you. So just removing those things, now you have more things in your environment that support you. And then one more thing, think about a remote control. Like when you are sitting in front of the television and you push the button on the remote control, invisible energy goes somewhere, right? And all of a sudden your channels change. So it's kind of like that with the things in your environment. They are constantly beaming energy to you and you are responding to it consciously or unconsciously. And so when you consciously go and remove things that just don't have a good energy, or they're just old or don't represent who you are, you actually clean up the energy in your environment.
Oh, I love that idea. And I like the idea of going around with a box in my house and putting things in there that, you know, that I don't even need, really.
No, and it's really true. And then we're so attached to our things that we sometimes say, oh, well, I can use this. This is still good. Maybe I'll give it to my grandchild's child in the future. But I usually just say, if you're afraid of letting go, because sometimes it is difficult, we actually get pain in our brain when we throw things away that are ours, because we develop energetic attachments to it. There's actually studies that show that when the same area in your brain lights up, when you cut your finger, the same area lights up when you get rid of something that's personal. So there is brain pain associated with letting go. So what I say is, have a box, like a nice file box or whatever, put the things in the box. And if you're not ready to let go of it right away, write a date 3 months from now, 6 months from now, December 31st, 2023. And if you haven't touched anything in that box, then obviously you don't need it. Then you can just take it and donate it as is. So letting go of the things that are draining us is one of the easiest ways to improve your energy around you.
Okay.
Now the third one, and then we can get into all the real principles, but these are just foundational things that if you just start here, you will feel better by just being in your environment. So the third one I always say is pay attention to what you have on your walls. Pay attention to the pictures on your wall. Your pictures are a moving story of energy and they actually pour energy in. So if you have a beautiful picture of a living flower with beautiful colors on it, that pours that energy into the room. If you have, and again, this is picture symbolism and it's all over, look at your pictures on the wall. If you say you want to have more people in your life, but then you have all these lonely pictures of a peer or somebody sitting alone, you actually are recreating that energy in your environment. So it's like, look at the pictures on your wall and just say, are they up to date with who I am? When I look at these pictures, do they bring me joy? Do they infuse me with some sort of good feeling?
Oh, wow. I feel like that says a lot, especially like you said, if you happen to have a lot of pictures that, yeah, show you being alone or not just you or somebody being alone.
Yes.
You want to be surrounded by a number of people or be more in a community or social. So I don't know. That's very interesting. I've never really thought about that.
Yeah. It's symbolic, really, like what we feel inside unconsciously, we put up on the outside unconsciously, and then we continue to live in that resonance. So the first time I really saw this in play is I was called to go to a consultation for a young man who had been divorced for 7 years. I think he was in his 40s, maybe. And he just said, we had a little talk in his living room. He had his own house. It looked beautiful from where I was sitting, lots of life force in it, not cluttered, nice appointed things. And he says, you know, I just have had a really hard time finding a relationship. And when I do finally meet someone, it's like they take off, they move, or it doesn't work. And he's like, I just thought I would have you come and just see what's going on. So I walked around his home. It looked good. The kitchen looked good. The study looked good. Everything was good. And then we got to the bedroom, and the bedroom in feng shui represents our relationships with ourselves and with our primary partner. And in his bedroom, right above his bed, was a picture of this cracked, dry, sort of lava flow that had like, and it was just sort of this black and white sort of artistic picture, but it really was like voided. It just looked like a void, like there's nothing. And then on the other wall was literally a picture of an airplane taking off. And as soon as I saw it, that's where I first started seeing the correlation. I'm like, look, why did you put this picture here? Questioning above his bed, right? His partnership area. He said, I don't know. A friend took this picture and gave it to me, and I just didn't know where else to put it, so I put it here. And then I said, what about this airplane? He goes, oh, I used to work for this airlines, and when I left, the employees got together and got me this picture. And I said, this is a picture of your love life. Look, you have nothing going on. Look at this dry, cracked lava flow. And you just told me that everyone keeps taking off, and there's the airplane. He's like, holy cow, the picture is exactly what the symbolism of what he said. So, of course, what we did, we placed it with abundance, with pictures of things that, like, I think he wanted, what you want to do is put pairs around you, right? So pairs of ducks, pairs of trees, pairs of flies, just anything in twos or anything that looks really flourishing. And you want to put on your wall the energy, what you want to create in your life, so that subconsciously you're seeing that this is helping you to create.
Wow, that's pretty fantastic. I think everybody who's listening is probably going to start doing more of a deeper dive of what's on their walls.
Yes, it's so important. And I'll just give you one to really like drive it home. I went to this one lady's home, and she was a young woman, looked like she was maybe in her 30s or 40s, and she had one child. And I walked in a little tiny sort of studio cottage, and I noticed immediately that everything was kind of black and white, like literally, like it was like the motif, I wasn't sure if it was design, but it just felt very black and white. Going through the house, I saw this sort of, you know, and right above her bed, there was like one black and white tree. It was a beautiful, like an Ansel Adams or something, beautiful. And so anyway, listening to her story, she basically had to move there because her husband was a pilot, and his airplane fell down and fell out of the sky and died for some reason. So he died. And so he didn't have insurance. She was forced to move to this little cottage. And so all the color, the vibrancy had gone out of her life. And so her house was lonely, and that was the feeling that I got, but she represented it by buying new things in black and white to represent kind of to that resonated with how she was feeling.
Wow. I think, you know, this is useful, I think, on multiple levels, because like you said, what we're choosing to put on the walls is a reflection of what's really going on inside of us.
Yeah. So those are the three main principles. So before I even tell people like, oh, put this up, do this, do that, I just say, do these three things, because this will immediately improve your energy.
Definitely.
So those are energetic things that I distilled over time after doing thousands of feng shui consultations. Okay. So now if we want to get into the actual like feng shui of things, well, there's something in feng shui called the three pillars. And these are three things. Like, I don't know if you remember in astrology, the three pillars are the sun, the moon, the ascendant. Those are the three things. Well, in feng shui, we also have three things that are very important. And it is your entrance, your bed position, and your stove or your kitchen. So I'll go over those because these are really simple things to really just keep in mind. So entrance. Now think about your entrance. Like, I know that some of you might have homes, so you have a garage entrance, you have a front entrance, but I want you to think of the architectural front door, like what the architect deemed to be the front door. So if you're in an apartment, it's easy. The front door represents where all energy enters. It's like the mouth of the home. It's where the home actually breathes. So when you think of your nose, your mouth, you breathe, you inhale through your nose. That's how you get your life force. So your home also breathes in energy. So we want to make sure that entrance is not only attractive, but clear, open, basically calling in good energy. So what I always suggest people to do is stand in front of your entrance as if you were a stranger. Like, we know our entrance, but you stand there and look at it. Are the flowers dead around there? Do you have a bunch of shoes there? Is your welcome mat worn out? What does the entrance look like? So that's the first thing from the outside. And what you want to do is create an inviting entrance, because we want the energy to be invited in. So if the saying really is just like, if you look down the whole line of homes on a street, and I'm energy, perhaps, right? Or I'm a person, I'm going to look at what's most attractive. I'm going to be drawn to what is most welcoming. So we want to make sure that your entrance is welcoming. So I usually say, if you're ready for new energy, get a new welcome mat and make sure your welcome mat is 3 feet, like at least the width of your door. A lot of times people have homes, but they don't have a welcome mat. So welcome mat sort of lands the energy there. And then have some flowers. Flowers are life force, or plants are life force. Don't have dead plants there because that represents dead energy. Okay, so what do you think about that so far?
I love the idea of getting the new welcome mat, especially because, yeah, it does set the tone. It sets the energy of, you know, moving into your space. And it feels, I don't know, this is a completely different way that I'm thinking about even my home right now. Yeah. And I think, yes, having, you know, dead plants, dead flowers around your door is probably not the best way to, you know, invite new energy in.
Yeah, and it's just kind of funny because we acclimate to it. I mean, we just come in and out because our door is just where we enter our home. But we want to start to create a sacred place because your home protects you. Your home is your home base. Your home is where you recharge. Your home is what fuels you. And so we want to start to create a relationship with our home, almost like a sentient relationship. Like, hey, home, thank you for supporting me. I want to make sure that everything around you, you're breathing fresh, clean air in, right? So it's like, and sometimes we set intentions in our head, but tangible, physical, visible things are very helpful as human beings to kind of help us to really set that. So I usually just say, hey, if you're ready for some new energy, this is not magic. I mean, it's just energy flow. We're just working with energy. So we set the intention. We put a nice welcome mat, make sure we sweep off some leaves, just, you know, tidy up the entrance. And then the next thing is when you open your door, does it squeak? Or does it open effortlessly? When you put your key in, you have to jiggle your keys 100 times because the lock is kind of sticky. So we want to have an effortless enter, right? We don't want the energy to have trouble entering. So grease hinges. Make sure your key goes in. Do some WD-40, yeah. One of those. Get it nice and clean so you walk in effortlessly. And then what do you see when you walk in? Do you see a pile of bills? Is your entryway have like a stand with just messy stuff all over? It's almost like you want to really set the tone, because when you enter your home, that is the impact that you get while you spend the rest of your time in your home before you leave the next day to go out. So entrance is super important.
Yes, those are incredibly helpful tips.
Right. And it makes sense. I think it just makes sense. Like, you don't think about it. Like, until someone told me, I never thought about it. So now I'm sharing it with you. It's like, oh yeah, that's so interesting, right? If I can come into my front door. And again, those of you that come in through your garage door, you can do the same as well. Make sure that you open, usually you open into a laundry room oftentimes, and it's just like, oh God, a bunch of laundry. So once in a while, you want to use your front door because that's where the home breathes. Because sometimes we get so accustomed to using those back doors when we come in.
Definitely. And so the second pillar you said was bed position.
Bed position. So when you stand at the door of your bedroom looking in, your ideal position for your bed, it's called a power position. And what it means is that you want to be laying in the bed so that you can see the door.
Okay.
Okay. So think of a president's office at an office. When you walk in, you never see the president staring out the window with his back to the door. He is sitting there facing the door, and you might go and sit down and your back will be the door. It's the same with the bed. You walk in to the bed. You want the head of the bed to be furthest away from the door so that you can see the door, because that's the way that you sleep deeply. Because then you're not afraid of somebody coming in behind you. So it's a little bit hard to describe, but if you just imagine the room, and then if you open your door and you look in, you're hopefully going to see that your head is the farthest from the door.
Okay.
And so those are, and then if this is of any interest, you can always just Google like bed power position, and then you'll probably see lots of diagrams on that. So that's pillar number two. And then the stove is interesting because the stove is considered in feng shui like the heart of the home. It's where we nourish ourselves. It's where the stove is where you cook, right? Where you cook And then people eat the food and get energy to go out and do what they do in life. So the stove position, you also, if your back is to everyone while you're cooking, one of the cures, we say, how do we cure it, is like if you can put a reflective surface above your stove, whether it's a mirror or whether you have a microwave up there and you can see behind you, almost like a rearview mirror, because the principle really is if you are cooking and somebody is behind you, you have to take your attention away from the food to look to see who's there, and that sort of disrupts the energy. So that's the third pillar, is like making sure. And if you have one of those stoves where it's like an island stove or you're overseeing everybody, that's considered a really powerful positioning for that.
Wow. These are all things I have never considered, you know, in regards to my home or the home.
Well, let me give you one more that's kind of interesting on that. Sure. It's not really a pillar, but it's super interesting. So there's male and female energies, right? Yin and yang, and we might say up and down, right and left. So that feminine and masculine principle. The stove is very active. It's considered a masculine principle. It's male. It's generating. It's generating energy and creating food for everyone to eat. So that's the masculine. The feminine energy in a kitchen is the refrigerator, because think about what we ask the refrigerator to do: hug and hold the food. We open that door, we grab the food, it's very feminine, it nurtures us, the refrigerator. So in order to balance out your male-female energies, your active-passive energies, your conscious, unconscious, and all those, what you wanna do is really spend some time cleaning your stove, make sure all your burners are burning, you're using all your burners, not just the front two, not just the left two, use all your burners. This is the manifestation of your wealth and sort of your energy. And make sure you clear out your refrigerator, get rid of your expired capers and foods that you wouldn't eat. Don't overclutter it, and be really grateful because that refrigerator holds a lot of your food. So the male-female element can just be paid attention to in the kitchen to help you kind of balance out. And it would feel so good, right, to clean your stove, knowing that you're cleaning it for like manifesting, and then your refrigerator, that it's offering you that sustenance.
Yes, definitely. My goodness, I know I already said this, but this just really, you know, is going to force me to look at things in my home very differently than how I've, you know, perceived it thus far. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about the, and I could have this wrong, but the five elements in feng shui.
Yes, thank you. The five elements are a really important part of feng shui. So I want you to think, I'll tell you what they are. Just imagine them in nature: water, wood in the terms of like trees, fire, like sun, earth that we walk on our foundation, and metal. Metal is created from earth. It's the value that we use to like coins and things. And so these five elements are in feng shui believed to not only represent the, remember how I said in the beginning, the philosophy of nature brought indoors. So what we do is indoors, these elements all have colors, like fire is red, earth is earth toned, wood is green. So all of these colors, when brought into the home in the form of the elements themselves, like a metal looking lamp could represent metal. These elements are represented color, shape, and the actual elements themselves. So when we have all five of these elements in our home, in the form of color, shapes, and actual material, it's said to create that feeling of harmony like we would feel when we're outdoors. So, and then going one step further, the elements also, and this is traditional Chinese medicine, represents everything from seasons to tastes to our organs to our personalities, which I ended up taking this five element system and creating a personality test around it, which we can talk about later. But in traditional Chinese feng shui, the five elements are believed to permeate everything and everyone and every being in every place. And so we use that as sort of a template when we're analyzing a home to see if it's in balance. Like if it's all white, that's considered metal, all white and silver, there's not a lot of greens and reds and energy. So a good balanced place is supposedly has a good balance of these elements.
Oh my goodness. And you said that you created a superpower personality assessment based on these elements. So can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, thank you. So what happened was, like, with all my experience with astrology, learning about people and potentials and personalities, and then bringing on the feng shui and learning about the elements, that they also have this personality aspect to it. A couple of years ago, I wanted to write a book, and I was going to write a book on some superpower. Positivity is a superpower, something like that. And it just led to, well, aren't there more superpowers? So I took the ancient five element system from feng shui, and I personified each element. So, and I created an assessment where you just take this 10-minute assessment, and it tells you what your intrinsic nature is, like what your two highest elements are. And then it basically tells you about your personality in the form of this archetype. And it's really fascinating. So water people are, think water, water is fluid, goes with the flow. Water people are go with the flow. They're very emotional. They're very sensitive because water will heat up or cool down based on the temperature around them. Wood people, think about wood. Wood is always moving, always creating. Wood is just extremely creative the way trees grow, and wood people are always moving, very creative. So we can actually match the elements to the personality, and it just turned out to be something really fun I did to turn it all into like superpowers.
That is quite amazing. So can we talk just a little bit about these superhero like archetypes around the elements? Like maybe just a couple examples, if you can think of them off the top of your head.
Oh, of course. Of course. Okay. So like my assistant, Erin, she tested really high metal and wood. Metal people are like very efficient. They are very much, they like rules and follow the rules. They're very organized. And she tested high in metal and wood is moving fast. So her archetype is the efficient producer, which she is. She's super efficient. She produces really well. Personally, I am the intuitive luminary. I lead with water. So water is very intuitive and sensitive, and luminary is the fire aspect. So I want to bring light to people's lives. So I care about you with my white water, and I want to bring light. And that's me. My other half, he's the resourceful creator. He's a chef. And so he tested very high in water. So he's very resourceful, like water, and tested secondly in wood, which is the creative. So he's the resourceful creator. So there's like 20 archetypes that come from these combined primary and secondary elements.
Between me and you, you know, I took your assessment, yes. And I also identified as the resourceful creator.
That's right. So did you see that? Like, did you see like the resources? So looking at all the like resources, like as a chef, he would be like, oh, I have all these ingredients and let me create from it. Do you see that in your life too?
Yes, I definitely do. And these were related to the elements of water and wood, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And earth people. So you saw that?
Yes. Did you say earth people?
Yeah. Earth people are, yes. Earth people is a little different. So think about earth. We walk all over the earth, right? Earth is our foundation. So earth people are a little bit slower because earth is more slow, but they have a superpower, and it's patience. And why I did this actually was because I think when we're growing up, we're told how we should be. Like parents will be like, you should be more like your sister, Susie, she's more talkative. You should be not so this, you should be more that, not this. So we kind of grow up thinking like, am I not like it? Do what I bring to the table, is that not good? So the assessment really just kind of says, these are your core values of who you are. These are your core strengths, which I called them superpowers. These are your weaknesses. We all have powers and weaknesses. And so I felt that it was sort of a way to know who you are and appreciate yourself and others as they are.
Definitely. And Alice, again, you know, thank you so much for joining me today for this, you know, discussion about feng shui. And if people wanted to find you and connect with you, how can they do so?
Oh, it's super easy. You would just go to, I guess the best one would be your happiness, the letter u.com, yourhappinessu.com. And if anyone wanted to take the assessment, it's at masteryoursuperpowers.com. And you can take the assessment and get your overview.
Awesome. That's wonderful. And I'll post everything in the show notes so everybody can find you and take this assessment if they want to. And again, it was great meeting with you today, having this conversation. And thank you for informing us all about feng shui. This was super helpful, and it's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Dina. I'll see you again. Thank you very much for having me.
No problem. Thank you.